The president was greeted by veteran Soviet ambassador
to offer condolences on the death of Leonid Brezhnev.
The operation is what's crucial, because what we do is for the good of the many. Don't let your conscience get us killed.
If you tell her now, it will all blow up.
But at least she'll know who she is.
Every move you make.
Jamie, we're here to do The Americans, episode 403, experimental prototype City of Tomorrow on West Coast Project.
That sounds great, Mike.
How are you doing tonight, Jamie?
All right. Is this like the fifth time this week that we've said, how you doing tonight?
Every time. We do it every time.
I know. But then you were like, man, why we talk to each other for 15 minutes and then we say, oh, hey, how you doing?
Well, because I like you. I like talking to you. You want to do a cold blast open, just start doing the podcast from the get-go?
No. No.
All right.
Oh, Mike. All right. What?
Do you want to start over?
No. What?
Okay. You're just like Cameron on Halt and Catch Fire.
Why? What did I do?
That's what she does. She puts the vowel on the end of her words when she's angry. No.
Oh, sorry.
You do that. Some girls do that.
Did I do that?
Yeah, you do that a lot.
Sorry.
All right, Jamie, we're here to do this episode. And what did you think of this episode, 403?
It was okay. It was okay. So part of it was good because I was really happy to see that Paige actually is kind of frustrated with herself. You know, so that was good. And then it kind of took on the tone of a horror movie. I don't know, for a minute. I don't know.
Took on the tone of a horror movie? Well, I'll be interested to hear how that fits in.
Okay.
Well, it starts out with Philip waking up with Elizabeth watching him. Philip looks older and older every episode. Looks, yeah. He practically looks haggard now.
Well, he's been looking haggard since last season. But yeah, I mean, you know, he's not doing awesomely.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, she watches him wake up, and we go right to a Mary Kay meeting. We meet a couple new people here, Jamie. Young Hee. Did you remember Mary Kay?
Yeah.
I guess it's still around to remember, huh? It's still a product.
Yep.
Do you ever buy any?
Unfortunately, I bought some once, and I have very sensitive skin. And I'm allergic to Mary Kay, so it wasn't awesome.
Well, I think I'd be allergic to them, too, knocking on my door.
What? You're allergic to them knocking on your door?
Well, the door-to-door part of it. Well, this Young Hee is a stud sales lady, Jamie, for Mary Kay Cosmetics. And she's got the concern that people look too green, and she can help them with that problem. Jamie, you got to help me with this. Is this a girl thing that makeup makes you look green?
No. Although I can help you with this because I happen to have the same skin tone issue that Asian people have. It is having a yellow undertone. So like if you look at me in any of my pictures, I'm really fair. My skin is fair. But if you put like something yellow right next to me or behind me, I will look yellow. And that is the same issue that Asian people have. And so because white people and some black people tend to have blue undertones in their skin, right? If you like, they'll make makeup with like a blue, like blue tone to it, and it'll enhance the skin tone or bring down redness in skin of people who have blue undertone, right? But if you don't have that, if you have yellow undertone, it makes you look green.
Huh, sounds very scientific.
It's about color.
Well, they have this meeting and about how Mary Kay is this great opportunity, and they're all from different places, but Young Hee makes the ironic statement, Jamie, we're all American now. Oh, no, and we should say, of course, that Elizabeth is there as Patty. I think her name's Patty. And she is way made up. She's wearing more makeup than I think I've ever seen her wear.
Yeah, well, that's because it's that Mary Kay type situation going on.
Yeah, powder it up. So why is she grooming this young-hee Korean woman?
Oh, God only knows. But you know, it's something. They're up to something, and it's going to end up being something horrible they're going to use them for, and you know how it goes.
I don't think we have enough information to supposed to have the knowledge to know yet, but it's interesting that she's definitely grooming her. She's surprising her at the supermarket and meeting her and ingratiating herself into her family and stuff.
Yeah.
But this takes us right up to the credits. We come back and we see Pastor Tim. Now, last week, the show was about Pastor Tim. He wasn't even on it. But this was an amazing scene this time. They're, Elizabeth and Philip are being honest with Pastor Tim. What the fuck?
Right? I expected for somebody to wake up any second.
Yeah, a flashback or a dream or something.
Yeah. It was bizarre. It was bizarre.
Well, we'll do the math on this one, Jamie. But here's what they talk about. Elizabeth says, what we do is like what you do. And Philip says, when we were hired, we were described as peace workers. And Elizabeth says, we believe in equal rights for what everyone, we believe in equal rights for people, for what they believe. People have the right to believe what they want. And Tim says, well, unless it's religious, unless they're religious. Jamie, why? Okay, let's try to do the math on Pastor Tim.
All right.
Why is he pushing back? What's the strategy here? I mean, in the plot, what's the strategy with Pastor Tim?
Okay, so I don't know. Well, okay, so you mean for as far as the writers go?
Yeah. What's if Tim is truly a pastor, he's an idiot for pushing back or even having this meeting with them. If Tim is a pastor or a spy, either one, he's risking instant assassination just by sitting in front of them. And if Tim's the spy and not a pastor, he's risking exposure. And he's still laying bare the simplest solution to all this is Philip and Elizabeth assassinate him. So what is he? Is he a pastor, a spy, or a pastor becoming a spy?
I am 100% convinced that now, well, okay, 90% convinced now that he is only the pastor.
What's your theory there?
Okay, so it just is getting a little too complicated without them giving us anything to really go on to say that he is anything but the pastor. Like, for example, if he were a spy and, he, you know, like, the only thing I can imagine is that he is there to try to see, you know, if the family is really going to try to recruit Paige or, you know, if he were working for Russia, for example, you know, or try to see if, you know, under pressure, if Paige would crack, if it's some sort of, you know, like initiation exam for her or something. I don't know. But otherwise, I don't know what the heck is going on. So I figure either he is a really big initiation test for Paige into, you know, the Russian spy trade, or he really is a pastor, which that's 90% of my brain believes that he's really a pastor and he's really dealing with this crap. And, that's just the way it is. Like, and he's, I think he's giving pushback because he feels safe.
What if he's a spy for part of the Russian side? Like, in other words, what if Claudia knows about him, but Gabriel does not know about him, and he's there to test certain elements inside the Russian spy team?
I could see that. I mean, it's plausible. Russians are paranoid.
He's not. I don't think he's a completely innocent pastor. Because if he was, he'd be an idiot for pushing back against these people that he knows the Russian spies. He leaves them no choice, right? Yeah. He leaves them no choice but to eliminate him. And then he talks about how he's told his wife. He's relayed the conversation between him and Paige to his wife.
Yes.
Yeah, but no, you can't do that. That's, you don't leave. And then they leave it the option like, okay, well, let's think about this for a few days. No, that's not an option. That is not even an option even to think about for 1 second.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's crazy. I don't know. I don't get the story.
I think because he is bold enough to say that. Yeah, I told my wife. She's my partner, and if I don't tell her, we can't run this church. So right, this bullshit. He leaves them no option. If he's a real, just simple pastor, he leaves them no option but to kill him and his wife.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, well, that's what Gabriel wants to do. And so I don't know. I mean, I really, really, it's rough. It's a tough question. It's a very uncomfortable thing to witness because you don't know what side to be on. And it seems as though our favorite shows are enjoying putting us in those positions of like, we don't know where to fall, you know, like we don't know what side to fall on. I don't know. It's a really bizarre story. It's really convoluted.
My first notes when I first started watching them talk to this Pastor Tim after I like woke myself up from the floor is that they're interviewing Tim for his life here. They're interviewing him, and his if he passes, he lives. If he doesn't, he's dead.
Yeah, which is the whole that I don't know if that because that's exactly what I thought too. That's exactly how I felt, and I was just waiting for one of them to just like murder him right there. But if that's the case, then it is so much more a jaw-dropping moment and a head-smacking, like, what the hell are you doing, dude? When he acts so rough with them, like, yeah, well, I don't know what I'm going to do, and we'll see, you know.
So righteous. Maybe he just feels righteous. I don't know. Maybe that's it.
I don't know where he thinks he gets the authority to talk to two spies like that.
Underestimate them. I guess that could be part of the plot is he underestimates what they might do.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It's really bizarre to me. And especially given that, you know, this was the time of the Cold War and people were paranoid about things like spies and stuff. So I don't know. I don't know.
I think by process of elimination of the most hardest things to believe, that is the hardest thing to believe, that he just underestimates them and, well, I'm going to say what I have to say and do what I have to do. And I'm sorry if that disrupts your spy game. I think that's too hard to believe. It's easier to believe that he's involved somehow and somehow somebody's got his back somewhere where they've encouraged him enough that he knows they won't kill him or they won't be able to kill him. Mm-hmm. Although they could have killed him right there in that room just by anger or by, you know, taking care of the problem right there instantly. So it's tricky. It's a tough one.
Yeah. But Philip's right, though. I mean, no matter what happens, if anything happens to Tim, she's going to know it's her parents.
That may be, I think they say this later on, that may be a secondary problem, though. The real problem is this guy just telling people. And now he's told his wife who's going to tell other people. You know, that doesn't stop with her.
Right, exactly. She's the problem. She's the loose cannon. Maybe she dies and he doesn't die. I don't know.
They better do this dying thing quick because let's think about this for a couple of days is not an option.
Right.
All right. So they go to Gabriel now and Philip tells him, Pastor Tim told his wife, Alice, and here, have some Glanders, gives the Glanders back. The thing's been handed back and forth more than.
Hot Glanders.
And they talk about. They all three discuss whether or not they should have even told Paige this story in the first place, this truth.
Okay, so this is all Elizabeth's fault because Philip did not want to tell her. He fought her and fought her. He did not want Paige to know.
Well, and this is an interesting dynamic too because Elizabeth now seems to be wanting to protect the family more than anything.
Yeah, yeah.
The good soldier Elizabeth has become the family Elizabeth.
Yeah, that's right. She's trying to keep everybody safe and as, you know, productive as, you know, as they can be. I don't know if she can do it now. It's a little late.
Well, we're not done with Pastor Tim here or my math on it because it keeps popping up. But Elizabeth proposes action, and that means death to Pastor Tim and to his wife, Alice. Philip proposes we should leave, and at this point in the episode, I thought, leave where? Are we going to go to Omaha? Are we going to go to Los Angeles? What are we going to do? But I think they ultimately talk about Odessa, like nice southern part of Russia, nicer than the Siberian wilderness. Mm-hmm. And Philip discusses this openly now with Gabriel. And I think the fact that Philip discussing this with Gabriel indicates they're not thinking in the defector sense, but more in just like a retreat, a soldierly retreat to Russia context.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I don't think any of this stuff is going to work. I don't know what they're going to do.
Because before Philip was talking about, hey, we got this nice new Camaro. Well, they'll give us $2 million if we switch sides and defect, meaning truly defect to the United States. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's talking about that anymore here. I think he's talking about more of a friendly defection back to defect as Americans to Russia.
Yeah, well, I mean, basically go back home.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, they do worry about Paige's reaction. And again, Gabriel puts in the time element. He offers that he'll discuss it with the center. And this gets them kind of mad. I mean, they're talking about their daughter here, and he's talking about discussing it with this third party that'll tell us what to do. Philip's really pissed off about this.
The thing that's so crazy to me is that Gabriel trusts the center that as much as he trusts the center. That, to me, is weird. And by the way, before we get too deep into our discussion about this episode, did you happen to listen to the Insider podcast?
No, not yet.
Oh, God, it's awesome. It's awesome. They have a spy, a retired spy on there, and like not like Joe Weisberg. It's this other dude who was a spy for Russia. Living in the United States, and he was found out by the FBI.
Wow.
It's a fascinating...
And he's alive?
He's alive. Oh, it's crazy. His story is really fascinating.
Well, that's... is that Slate's Insider?
That's the Slate Insider podcast.
Cool.
Yeah. Yeah, so check it out.
Well, so, Jamie, my mind was doing the math constantly on this, so... If Gabriel offers that he's going to discuss it with the center, he seemingly is a little not as concerned as he would be if Tim was just a wild card. If he knew Tim was in on something, a test of somebody or somehow, then he may act like this then, because he would think, okay, don't worry, you guys, I'll talk this over with the center, because he knows that Tim's really not a problem. Right? Am I overthinking this, or is there any sense to that?
No, I don't think you're overthinking it. I think that this plot invites thinking to the degree that you're doing. And I think that that's a perfectly reasoned argument, you know, that if Gabriel is in on this, then that would be exactly how he would behave. But here's what occurred to me while you were explaining that. What if Gabriel is trying to do something to save Elizabeth and Philip and what they want, and Claudia didn't like that, and Claudia gave Glanders to our dear buddy Gabriel.
She's trying to knock him off.
Maybe.
I do think Claudia and Gabriel are at odds. They seem to be in their brief encounter in this episode. But I don't know why.
The trade that they're engaged in, that the kinds of careers, the industry, so to speak, that they're a part of is, you know, it's a dangerous thing. Your friend, your very good friend, could really be your enemy, you know?
You mean Claudia and Gabriel and people on the same team could not be, like Stan and Adderhall could be enemies?
But more likely than not, it would be somebody like, you know, Claudia and Gabriel, because they are really, they're both spies, you know?
Hey, Jamie, I think we might have a friend on the line.
Yeah, I think we do.
I don't know. He may be in, his screen may be in sleep mode.
Oh.
Well, let's just keep going.
Okay.
So, this math is tough because there's no easy answer at the end of it. There's a lot of open ends dangling. I'm just looking for the clues and trying to guess by the clues that I think are clues. They may not even be clues.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's really weird. It's almost like this episode has plunked us into a new story arc, you know? Because Claudia is there. And by the way, I love her character. I love the actress. So I was really happy to see Margot Martindale. And I have to say, even though I love to hate Gabriel, when I saw him on the floor, I thought, oh gosh, no, he's dying for a split second.
Yeah, until he saw the blood leaking out of his mouth.
And then I was like, oh, yeah, okay, that's good.
All right, so Jamie, at the FBI, Gad is grumpy about the copies being sloppy and left all over the counter. But it's really like 6 pages, right? Left 6 copies of something?
6 pages, yes.
Oh, my God, what a tragedy.
Well, you know what it is. I mean, like, he's afraid that somebody's copying files, and which somebody is, and it's Martha.
Well, yeah, she's the secretary, so she's going to be the one probably doing the most copying.
Well, I mean, and she was making those copies, and that's why, like, Stan was sitting there looking at her like, I see you.
Yeah, Stan eyes Martha from across the room, and he has a little rat nose twitch in his face. Yeah. Did you see that? He has a little suspicious twitch to his nose.
Oh, for sure.
She stares him back down, though, pretty convincingly. This must be something she learned from Philip as a spy trick, like not to avert your eyes.
Okay, let me just say, I loved my favorite scene in this episode and probably my favorite scene in this entire season and one of my favorite in the entire series happened this episode, and we didn't talk about it, but it was that opening scene, the one where Martha is laying in bed and she's next to Philip and she's facing him and she's just looking at him and he's asleep, or ostensibly he's asleep, and then he opens his eyes and he's like, what? And she says, you know, I can't get used to it, or something like that.
Yeah, you don't remember talking about that because I totally blew it. I said, well, Elizabeth watching him, of course it was Martha. It was Clark and Martha, and that's where Philip looked haggard waking up, and she was watching him. Martha watching him, not Elizabeth.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I also got to say that Michelle, our friend Michelle, who does the Tribal Rant podcast on the Americans, she reminded me I blew something last episode when I called the Russian guy in charge of the Siberian camp where Anton and Nina are. I called him Timashev. And yes, Timashev, of course, is the soldier that raped Elizabeth.
I meant to tell you. And I forgot because when I listened back to the podcast, that's when I heard it. I didn't hear it when you said it. I heard it when I listened back to the podcast. And I was like, Timashev? Who's he talking about Timashev for?
Yeah, I blew it.
And I realized it was China Shop you were talking about.
No, I just blew it. My Russian names all blend together.
Let me see what that dude's name actually is. While we're waiting for Robot, I'm going to look it up.
Okay, I'm just going to plow ahead.
Okay, so keep going. I'm with you.
They go to the market, the grocery market, and Elizabeth/Patty bumps into Young He. Now, Jamie, it's got to be awful to walk around in that painted doll state all the time.
Oh, what do you mean? That, like, all that makeup?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't wear a lot of makeup.
How long does that take to get ready every day?
No clue. It takes me about 10 minutes. I put on some eyeliner and I put on some blush. I'm really lucky I don't have to wear makeup.
Yeah, that would be a pain. And plus, it must not feel very comfortable.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, Young He offers to help her on her first sales call. Elizabeth/Patty appears to be, like, nervous about going on her first Mary Kay call. And she offers to help her. So we still don't know the grooming plan here, but clearly Elizabeth is following her around and bumping into her accidentally on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now Philip and Paige talk. They talk about Tim and loudmouth Alice, the wife.
God, now I like her even less.
Oh, Alice?
Yes, I don't like people who talk like that.
Yeah, Paige gets mad. Paige stands up and gets mad. She starts to rail against this Alice. And Philip tries to comfort her a little bit and just say, look, don't take too much fault in this because people talk. You can't always know what they're going to do. True. And Paige comes back with, well, she always starts with, I shouldn't be saying this, but blah, blah, blah. And she starts talking about stuff. She's really angry here.
Yes, and she should be. And she should be angry with herself, which she is. And that's appropriate because what she did was so freaking stupid. Ugh, I'm just so mad at her.
All right, so here's...
Okay, so that dude, I think his name is Vasily.
That's his first name.
Yeah, Nikolovich. I'm not good with Russian names. Yeah, I can only say my Russian friend's name. His name is Alexei.
Well, that's good to know, Jamie. Well, Philip asks Paige to talk to Tim again. And so this is confusing to me, too. Unless he's just setting Paige up to get her to think, well, look, we're trying to resolve this with Tim. We're not going to do anything to hurt him. We want to resolve it and figure it out. Is this his long play to make it look like they're not planning his murder? Don't laugh, because I think it is. Because they do some other things that kind of feed into this, too.
What? Okay, repeat yourself.
Well, Philip asked Paige to talk to Tim again. And right. I think this is a ploy on Philip's part to get Paige to think we want to talk to Tim and help and convince him not to out us. He's covering up for the fact that they may be planning to murder him in the next day or two.
No, because he really actively does not want that dude to get murdered. And by the way, Pastor Tim, his name is Kelly O'Quinn,
yeah.
Is that how they pronounce
Kelly
it?
Kelly O'Quinn. He's on the Watching the Americans podcast a lot as their guest. He's like their friend.
Oh, okay. That's really funny because that name, his name is French. And in Louisiana, we say O'Quinn. That's how you pronounce that. But it's interesting that he pronounces it in an Americanized way. And the other thing I was going to say about that, the reason I brought it up is because I just saw it. And every single time I watched the beginning credits of the show, I think, who is this chick named Kelly O'Quinn?
Oh, yeah, that's him.
Wow, that's awesome.
Well, this is bad strategy by Philip if what you think is what he's doing is true. He asked her to talk to him again. There's no talking anymore. They need to be loading guns and screwing on silencers, Jamie.
All right.
There's no talking to him. Let's see if we can get him to change his mind about blabbing everybody. I mean, who knows who he's talking to right then and there?
Normally, I'm the one calling for reason, but I got to tell you, I'm ready for them to shoot him in the brain. All right. So, okay, wait. So before we get going with Robot, could we please talk about Nina?
Oh, okay, but she hasn't appeared yet.
Oh, we'll keep going, but hurry up.
Okay.
I want to get to it before we start talking and getting, like, you know, lighthearted, so I can still have a little bit of, like, deep, because I really like the scenes with Nina.
Well, how are you going to talk about Nina five scenes before she shows up in the episode?
All right, just keep going. Fine.
All right, well, one thing Philip does with Paige is she tells her how to act around Tim, how to act with and around him. So he says to her, we have to think about him. Think like how he thinks. And he doesn't want to see you hurt. So it's almost like he's laying out the strategy. Like, let's fool him a little bit. He doesn't want to see you get hurt. So let's make him think you're going to be hurt if he tells and we have to go to jail and all this stuff happens.
Yes, that's right. And I hated that so much. It was a really weird feeling because while I was watching him do that, I was sitting here and I was having dinner and I was watching. And then when I heard what he was like, I was half paying attention because it was my first watch. And I looked up when he started talking because it hit my brain the wrong way. I was offended. It was offensive to me that he was sitting there telling her how to manipulate this guy, kind of, you know? That's what it felt like. It felt like a lie. And then Paige had the reaction that I probably would have had, except I probably would have had a worse reaction, which is surprising to me because I'm so irritated with Paige for how she's behaving. But I did not like that. And I know Philip doesn't have a choice. I mean, it's a terrible...
Well, the alternative is they kill him, and then Paige walks around the rest of her life thinking, I did something that got this guy murdered.
Right. It's all her fault anyway, but still. She's too young to take responsibility for it.
Well, so, she's going to... It doesn't matter if she takes the responsibility or not. She's going to feel responsible for that.
No, I know. That was a joke.
Oh, sorry.
I mean, I wouldn't want her to feel like that. I wouldn't want her, you know, some kid who's still developing brain, you know, made them make a stupid decision that they didn't think out very well. I mean, I don't know if she's upset with herself, and, you know, so I'm not really truly mad at her, but it's just so bad. And, you know, now, I mean, now she's in this terrible position, you know, and I kept thinking really about the parents too, you know, because this is, I don't know, when you're raising kids, you sometimes, you know, look back with, I don't know, with hindsight at things, and you wish you had done things differently. And sometimes it's a real, real regret, and you can't change it.
Well, that's how twisted this show is, in that the in their closet full of costumes to enact this play, they're play acting as Americans. Some of those costumes are the fact that they created children now that are live human beings and part of a family, and they can't not use those costumes, so they have to put them into play. It's twisted, man.
Yeah, that's it's really really deep what you just said. You really said something really meaningful just now, and it didn't occur to me that at some point Paige, and maybe Henry too, is going to have that question. They definitely, Paige will have that question. Like, okay, so if your life was a lie and everything you do is a lie, why am I here?
You think Paige is worrying about that?
But I believe that it will occur to her.
This, oh, definitely.
This show is too well written, you know, for them not to explore that angle. And that, you may have just given me the ingredient I need to hang on to the story, because it's bothering me a lot. And that would be really interesting to explore. So I'm hoping that they do end up examining that.
We'll see. I mean, it's cool that it's twisted because it's super smart. But I don't know. I'm glad it's complicated like this, even though I don't have the access to the answers.
Yeah. that was a fantastic thought.
All right. So on the bus with Martha now, Jamie, do you think that dead pilot's still tucked under seat 57 on the back of that bus?
Okay, well, it depends on the temperature outside.
No, I know it's not the airport shuttle. It's just another old bus from 1983. But Stan is watching for Martha to come home. And Jamie, he's in the famous nobody can see me sitting in my car because I'm on TV mode, sitting in his car in plain sight with not even trying to duck down in the windows.
Yes, this is your thing. This is the thing you hate so much.
Very tropey. Very TV tropey. But we jump to Younghee and Patty now on their sales call, Patty/Elizabeth. And Jamie, were they doing this whole sales call on the doorstep, or were they just leaving from sitting inside with this woman?
Okay, I think they were leaving from sitting inside.
But it was hard to figure out, right?
Yes.
Because they were standing there forever. They're talking, and Elizabeth's listening to the end of a story about her dog and relates her dog back to her, and she's building rapport with the woman. And the woman gives her a check. She's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I want to buy something. So it made it look like they gave the whole pitch standing there.
Yes, it does. It did. It made it seem that way. But I liked it that they did it like that, because it gave that sort of Avon feeling so that anybody who didn't know what Mary Kay was, then now they know.
Well, it reminds everybody that it's a door-to-door deal. You just walk up and down the street.
Yeah.
So because of that, they have sore feet and talk while they're in the park. And Younghee tells her that she's a natural. What a job that must be, though, Jamie. Just think about that, going door-to-door selling cosmetics. Physically tough, hard work, and mentally tough, conducting all this chit-chat with strangers and earning their trust. And I guess it's what Elizabeth is good at already.
Yeah.
So she would be a good sales lady. But she hints with Younghee about some family problems that she's having. She's working her way into this Younghee's inner circle of trust. And Younghee tells us that on her first day, her first try at Mary Kay, it took her 3 months to make her first sale.
Right.
And then she invites Elizabeth to her house for a party, a dinner.
Right.
So Elizabeth's plan is working.
That's correct.
All right, now Gabriel and Claudia. So we might have some more math here, Jamie. More plotting and scheming. And I started to write this out. So does Gabriel with Claudia, what is the truth? So what are clues of the truth? Because looking for clues of lies before. So what are clues of the truth? Like, is Gabriel being worked by Claudia? Does Gabriel talking to Claudia mean that he's telling the truth? That he think what he thinks is the truth? Right? Because he's kind of being honest with her, like, hey, we've got to figure this out and help them out. And she tells him, well, there's always another choice. But so that made me think that Claudia had inside information that Tim, don't worry about Tim, there's something cooking back home at HQ that we don't have to worry about. There's always another choice. Like, she was comforting Gabriel.
It's interesting. It seems like she's more in, you know, than he is.
Right.
And like, she's got a bit more authority and power than he has.
But it's freaking complicated, because this is what Gabriel was doing with the Jennings in the last scene. But to me, in this scene, Gabriel seems to be the agent of truth, and he may be the one getting duped by the longer term play by the center. He does seem to be talking honestly about the facts, though, because he tells this to Claudia. Paige told Tim, he told his wife, and now we need to help them fix it. And now Claudia advises, let's take it to the center and we'll figure everything out. She advises going to the center. And Gabriel advises urgency. It's all flipped. It's all like moved one notch up the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
Because Gabriel just told the Jennings, let's take it to the center and we'll figure it out. But now he's advising urgency. So this tells me he's portraying what he thinks is the truth. And Claudia is the one with the long play. I don't know, man.
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you this. I think that whatever happened, I think Claudia is responsible for what happened to Gabriel.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't think of that. In the scheme of their hierarchy, in the center Russian hierarchy, Claudia's higher than Gabriel, right?
All right. At one time, I thought that they were...
equal. They're both handlers.
Right. But now I'm not so sure. I think that she may be higher than him.
So that's my math problem here. That's more than just not being ironic, but it is a problem for me to figure out, because every time it goes one more higher up the ladder, Gabriel being higher than Philip and Elizabeth and advising caution and let's wait and talk to the center, then he talks to Claudia and she advises caution, talking to the center, and he advises urgency. It seems like that's, there's a long play. There's somehow got to be a long play. A longer term play than just Tim's. This got blurted out to Tim, and now we got to take him out of it.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah.
Because now, if that is in fact what happened, Jamie, that he's just a pastor, he got told too much, and he shared it, and he has to be eliminated. Why would they go through all these machinations of discussing this among all these different layers of their hierarchy? It would be a disappointment if that was the only thing.
Right. Yeah, so I don't know.
I don't know fucking know either, man. All right, Elizabeth gets home with her sore feet. She calls her job to, she talks to Philip and talks about her job and calls it different and fun. Says she walked 10 miles. And Philip tells her that he told Paige. And Elizabeth says, how does she feel? And Philip says, betrayed, hurt, and angry. So now I'm looking for clues about Philip here. And I think he's being honest, too. There's no long-term scheming at all from the Jennings, I don't think. Because I was ready to separate Philip and Elizabeth. Like, one of them may know about this plot with Pastor Tim being some sort of an agent.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think Philip's in on that, because he seems straight here. But I'm not sure. I'm not ready to be sure about Elizabeth yet.
No. No, I mean, because no, I don't think either one of the, if he is an inside dude, I don't think either one of them knows it.
Okay. So, Elizabeth asks him about Stan and makes the comment, It's better to have him friendly, to have him friendly, have a friendly at the FBI, a friendly pal at the FBI.
Mm-hmm.
So she wants him to make up with Stan.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now we're at Nina, Jamie, so you can let loose. Nina gets the lowdown on her slip up in Siberia. What were your thoughts about that?
Oh, wow. Okay, so I was so ready to get rid of Nina last episode, and this episode made it more interesting to me because she seems real. She seems uncovered. And, you know, Nina's always so inscrutable, and she was a little bit easier to understand. I think we, you know, got to see some real Nina. And I loved so much, you know, the scene where she was sleeping, because it contrasted so well with that scene where she had the fake nightmare. Remember when she was in the cell with Evie?
Yeah, she still has a nightmare, but it's a nicer nightmare.
No, well, and I don't know about nice. I don't know about that, but it was very real seeming, because that is like, I can relate to having that kind of that pained, you know, expression on your face and being like crying silently in your nightmare, as opposed to having some loud thrashing kind of, you know, nightmare that you would see people do on television. That what she had is like what I've had when I've had a nightmare.
Yeah, we're actually not even quite to that scene yet, but that's a very cool scene when it does come up. In this scene, she gets the lowdown about her slip up from what? Now, what's this guy's name? This is another guy. I always have trouble remembering his name.
Okay, so that's not Vasily?
Oh, maybe it is Vasily.
Okay.
She's really stoic, though. She just seems, Nina seems to accept her fate. She finds out that her husband spoke on her behalf. She may get away with less trouble because people seem to be supporting her, even though she screwed up. She was only trying to do something nice for somebody, not really something too nefarious. And Anton even told the state that he knew nothing about the plan.
Mm-hmm.
She wants to read his statement. She wants to ask if she can see it, and Vasily gives it to her. And then she smiles at her. What do you think she saw there? Just a nice thought of Anton?
I think that whatever it was that he wrote about her, she wanted to see. And that whatever it was that he wrote about her made her smile. And it just reminded me of someone who loves another person and who wants to see what they might write about them.
Yeah.
You know?
And then like, he did her a solid. He did kind of a good thing.
Well, he did. Yeah. I thought it was lovely. I think that scene was intended, at least partly, to indicate to us that she may love him.
I think she does, yeah.
Yeah.
So is there a long-term game, long game being played here?
No.
Can the show survive these multiple long games if they are, in fact, all spinning?
I don't think that's...
It's already pretty smart, but it takes a lot of candle power to process the information the show gives you.
Yeah.
These plots and tactics weaving together.
I don't think that that's a long game. I hope it's not. I don't think it is.
All right,
by the way, let me just say this, Mike, because while we're doing this podcast, when I stopped while we were working, talking earlier, and I went to look up to see who Vasily was, I went to the IMDb page that has all the cast and crew on it, and I just clicked on the picture of Tatiana. You should see this actress. She's unbelievably beautiful. I don't know what they do to her on The Americans to make her look less attractive, but she is gorgeous.
She's dead to me now. She's not in this episode. Just told you I'm using up all my candle power just to keep these facts straight. You're going to talk about it, Tatiana. Maybe she gets good Mary Kay cosmetics. All right, Jamie. Gabriel's trying to send them all off to Disney World now, Epcot Center. And Epcot, of course, is the Experimental Prototype City of Tomorrow acronym. And it must have opened around this time, 82, 83. And he wants them to go away so the pastor can have his accident.
Right.
He thinks this is a suitable alibi. And Philip reminds him, if we do this, she's going to know and we'll never, ever be able to bring her into this work. If you want her to become an agent, she's going to bridle at this and never, ever want to be part of this.
Right.
And then Elizabeth chirps in, well, we have no choice. So they are, Philip and Elizabeth are looking for different answers to this problem. If there is a long game, Philip and Elizabeth are on opposite sides of it.
You're right.
So
yeah. So I wouldn't say necessarily opposite sides, but they are not they're not pursuing the same solution.
They're on the opposite sides of the solution, right?
Yeah.
So on the same side. They talk in the car. Philip wants to leave to Russia. Here's where he mentions Odessa. And he says, we've been wrong about Paige so many times. Haven't we learned that she's going to figure it out? No matter what we do, she'll figure it out. And Elizabeth wants to do something that lets them keep their lives. She says, they've given us a way out so we can keep our lives. That, of course, means killing Pastor Tim and his wife. But they could keep their game going if they do that.
Yeah. That pulled me out of the episode. That line actually stopped me from actually paying attention to the episode, because that's a line I would have written differently as a writer. I would have said, and particularly the way that they are stressing Elizabeth's interest in family, I would have made that word singular. I would have said life, not lives.
They've given us a way out so we can keep our life.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. Now Paige goes and talks to Tim. She's, of course, mad at him about telling Alice.
Mm-hmm.
Tim defends that they're a pastor team. If he doesn't tell her, then she can't do her job the way that she's my partner and she needs to do it. And Paige just says the basic human thing. When I tell you a secret is a secret. You don't tell other people.
Mm-hmm.
And now, interestingly, Tim says, I'm trying to help you. And until we know what your parents do and whether people will get hurt, and Paige interrupts him, hey, buddy, that's my mom and dad you're talking about.
Right.
So, Jamie, they've obfuscated this strategy so freaking well. I don't know what's playing strategy and what's just being honestly said between characters.
Well, okay. So, I mean, Paige, she's not in trying to manipulate anybody. Like, that was really from her. And I think what's interesting here is that we are getting to a place, you know, if you push hard enough in a situation, and I don't know what kind of people you come from, what kind of family you come from, but in Louisiana, we are very animated, gregarious, kind of, you know, loud people. And, you know, sometimes things can happen. Like, you know, if it's a holiday and it's the whole family, you know, in the house and everybody's, you know, talking, drinking, blah, 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 you know, you might have two people, you know, a room full of people, maybe 10 people. And two people start to debate or argue or something. And then one person you think, you know, is for sure on somebody else's side, you might think they're on your side, right? And then you say the wrong thing. You cut too close to something they really care about. And all of a sudden, they're arguing with you too. And it, to me, that was that kind of moment. Like Paige has betrayed her parents in the most fundamental way. And she hates what they are, and she doesn't want to lie. And all of this stuff is true. But he cut a little too close to the bone. And when he did, he found out what's important to her.
Yeah, they've ruined the old tenet that the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Because here, the enemy of your enemy could still be your enemy.
Yeah.
There could be three enemies of all equally, or four of each other in this plot.
But I think what really is the takeaway here is, well, for me, is that it doesn't matter. You know, blood is thicker than water, dude. Blood is thicker than baptism water. That's her people.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Paige says, I can't do this, and leaves. So, Jamie, let's do a little test here. Let's do a little sampling here. So let's do the truth meter.
All right.
So on the 1 to 10 truth meter, 10, you're super truthful. 1, you're telling a blatant lie.
Okay.
What's Paige on the 1 to 10 on the truth meter?
Where? In this scene?
In the whole story.
10 is truth.
Yeah.
10.
I give her a 10, too. Yeah. How about Tim?
6.
Yeah, I'd probably give him in the middle of 5, maybe. Because he could flip until I know what the hell he's doing. I don't know what to give him.
Right.
That's great writing, though, because it's like, wow, what a character. All right, how about Philip?
9, 10.
Yeah, I'd give him pretty high, too, maybe 7 or 8. He's more truthful than not truthful. How about...
You're talking about in this story, right?
In this whole story, the whole story of the Americans, not just this scene or this episode.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How about Elizabeth?
Well, she's way down there. She's like maybe 4 because she lies about everything.
Yeah, I think she's pretty low too. Maybe 2 or 3. How about Gabriel?
Oh, maybe 3 or 4.
I think he's low to mid in general, but I think in this episode he's a 10. I think he's on the up and up in this episode.
Yes, I think in this episode, yes, he's telling the truth.
And how about Claudia?
Ooh, Claudia. Okay, so I think Claudia is probably maybe an 8 or a 9, maybe. Because I think that whatever she's not telling is what the problem is.
Wow. I give Claudia a 1. She's a puppet master, I think.
Huh.
She's pulling strings left and right.
Interesting.
Pretty cool. All right, so Jamie, here's where I think they're setting this all up, because clearly, they want to think this Epcot trip is a last-minute decision. So Henry's reading this brochure about Epcot over spring break, and instantly, of course, he wants to go. And they're playing it up for him to make the decision, like it's his idea to go to Epcot.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Jamie, he's making the most white meal ever. He's got a Wonder Bread fluff and milk meal. The only thing that's not snow white in that palette is this peanut butter he's putting on that sandwich.
That's a fluffer nutter.
Yeah, but that's pretty awful. Pretty processed.
Well, that's the 1980s.
Do you hear some music?
Nope.
Hold on a second. I gotta shut a window or something. Something's coming in. Sorry.
Tell a joke or tap dance or something.
All right, Americans audience. I'll tell you guys a secret that you don't know. I have the worst ability to tell jokes that you've ever witnessed ever. I can't tell a joke to save my life, except the one joke that I ever wrote, and it is this, and you'll just have to forgive
me. No, you're not going
to
tell that joke again?
I didn't tell it on The Americans.
Well, I'm back. You don't have to do it. All right, go ahead, Jamie.
No, it's too late. I'm not telling it now.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. So he's making the sandwich and he's finding out about Epcot on this brochure. Paige comes in and Henry blurts out the whole Epcot plan. Hey, we're going to go maybe to Epcot. It's a really cool place. And she eyes Elizabeth suspiciously like, okay, I see what you're doing here. So they're making it Henry's idea.
Yeah.
And then they talk with Philip and Paige and Elizabeth talk. She reveals that she talked with Tim and it didn't go very well. And she's not angry, Jamie, but she's annoyed. Almost like a spy would be, right? She's like, now we've got a problem. We just got to figure it out. It's very annoying. She's not a child that's angry. She's like a strategist here.
Yeah.
Paige.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting.
Yeah. It makes you wonder, like, if she's going to actually end up being a spy.
So Philip suggests talking to him upon the return from Orlando, knowing, of course, that the plan is to murder him while they're out of town.
Right, but that really bolsters the lie, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Paige seems to not be suspicious of this, and she seems to accept it.
Yeah. She's not as good at, you know, knowing her parents' deceptions and their tricks, you know?
But then, if there's not enough curveballs and spiderwebs in this, Jamie... Paige then asks what Tim wanted to know about people getting hurt. So is she Is this just a natural part of her being curious about Tim's question? Do people get hurt? Because Tim, that was a big thing that Tim left hanging with her. We need to find out what your mom and dad do, and do people really get hurt?
Yeah. 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 And it does make you wonder if the question was from her or from him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we get through all that. We go to the Young-hee house, now the party, the dinner party. They're drinking some Korean liquor. I didn't catch what that was. All I really caught is the brother likes to drink white wine.
Okay, so that Korean liquor, I'm trying to think of the name of it. What was it? I can't think of the name of it, but I... all right, so I have a friend who is Korean. She's actually Black American, but she grew up in Korea. And so we went and did karaoke one night with a bunch of our friends, and that stuff, the soju, that's what they call it. It's called soju. And it apparently tastes like Kool-Aid. It looks like Kool-Aid, tastes literally like Kool-Aid, like there's nothing in it. But look out, it apparently packs a huge punch, because one of my friends drank like a half pot of this stuff and couldn't walk out of the place.
Well, this brother who's drinking the white wine seems a little bit more sophisticated. He's like dressed really sharply, and he does drink a lot of white wine, though. He drinks like a gulp every time we see his face. And Elizabeth agrees with him, and she takes a drink. She's drinking the white wine and not the...
Soju.
Soju, sorry. And then she takes a bite of hot, something super hot, and they have to do some odd Korean jump fan your face dance to cool it off.
Right, the pepper dance.
Pretty funny.
Yeah.
Now Young-hee shares her family concerns, like, should have bought Cabbage Patch stock, putting us back in the time frame of 82, 83.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Young-hee, but she was a little too campy for me.
Yeah, she was, and I really detest the fact that these shows continue to put on stereotypes. These people who are clearly, the actors are not immigrants. And they don't have these accents, and they speak with these horrible, stilted, fobby-sounding, insulting accents. I think that we would be beyond that. You know, if you're going to hire somebody to play a part of an immigrant, hire somebody who sounds like they're from the country that they're supposed to be from. Don't insult somebody else by making them try to sound more quote-unquote ethnic. I really hate that. And you know, okay, so it's okay on the Americans, because at that time there probably were not a lot of really, you know, super Americanized, quote unquote, immigrant types from other countries like that. But I just hate it. I hate that so much. And this has been the second series that you and I watched that they've done this. And I find it, what do they call it? Patronizing. I don't like that. It's like trying to find a Black actor and tell him to make him, you know, sound more urban, you know, sound Blacker, you know?
Well, what do you think about Philip being like Matthew Rhys being Welsh, portraying an American, Russian / American?
That's different.
Okay.
It's different.
It's less mocking of the Korean.
It's not mocking at all.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, and she offers, I guess I didn't mind the fact that she was portraying a Korean woman in a very Korean degree. It's just that she was campy. Like, she offers Elizabeth one of her kids when she thinks Elizabeth has no children.
Yeah.
She was overly, overly friendly, saccharinely friendly.
Yeah.
Super friendly. So, all right, now Sandra visits the Jennings. She comes to see the Jennings, but really it's just Philip home alone. Good God, Jamie, I hope Stan doesn't pop over for some mac and cheese or borrow a crescent wrench or something. He's going to convince every suspicion he has when he sees Sandra sitting there with Philip alone.
I know. I wondered in my head what the hell Sandra was thinking, what the hell Philip was thinking. That's just, it's not cool. And that's actually, it's a great philosophical question, you know, about things like that. Because honestly, Philip and Sandra are friends. I mean, they get along, they have things in common, but there is a social contract there that's kind of being violated, which is everybody in the suburbs pretends, you know, and in America for that matter, pretends that, you know, that there are walls between the genders that you don't, and you shouldn't cross this barrier or that barrier. But in fact, life is messier than that. But it's better to pretend, because then that way people don't have to think about things like attraction, you know, between people that you shouldn't be attracted to because of the social contract. I mean, it's a really interesting question.
This little interaction with Sandra and Philip is really interesting. Do you think she's flirting with Philip?
No. Okay. No. But, I don't think she's flirting with him. But I think that the fact that you and I are talking about it is more interesting than that question. Because, you know, really, honestly, it's provocative. The fact that she went to drop off her, what's his name, Matthew, her son?
Yeah, I don't remember. I think so.
It's Matthew.
Yeah.
So the fact that she went to drop off Matthew at Stan's, and Stan is in the freaking house, and she felt okay going over there and, you know, knocking on the door. Now, that would have been fine. Well, actually, it might not have been fine, because she didn't know. This is why these writers are freaking geniuses, because they know all this stuff. When you're a writer, you go through every little tiny grain of minute story nuance that there is before you write a scene. They know all this stuff that you and I are talking about right now. They know it, and they made these decisions on purpose. So for us, you know.
Well, I think you're right about these walls, Jamie, that the social structure creates to help people when they are flirty and attracted to each other, because there's a ton of chemistry between Philip and Sandra.
Right. And so, but Sandra goes over there, and this, all of this happens, right? She goes over there to drop off Matthew. She wants to see Philip, right? That's who she really wants to see. And so she goes and she decides to knock on the door. But what's going through Sandra's mind when she makes that decision? She makes that decision not knowing whether Elizabeth is at home. And so she's got in her mind now, I'm willing to deceive Elizabeth because I want to see Philip. Not saying she's attracted to him, not saying anything else, but she wants to see Philip. So she is going to knock on the door. And if Elizabeth answers, it's going to be, hey, I was just dropping off Matthew. I wanted to say hi, blah, 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 blah. But that wasn't what it really was.
Well, how is that not flirting with him if she's going through that process?
Well, I mean, the flirting implies sexual interest.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Well, I don't know that she's sexually interested in Philip.
Hmm. Okay. Well, they talk about Est, and then it's really interesting that you mentioned these walls that we put up to allow us to interact, because I think Philip starts talking about Elizabeth because that sanctions their communication. If we talk about Elizabeth, it's like she's here and we're not really doing anything wrong.
Right.
He says Elizabeth's okay with his Est exploration, and Sandra kind of laughs a little bit. But I think that's how that's his little barrier that he can put up, like, hey, it's okay for you to be here because I'm talking about Elizabeth like she's my wife, and of course I'm with her. I'm not really interested in you. But that allows him to be interested in her.
Mm.
I don't know. It's crazy. It's complicated.
It is. It's interesting.
And so then Philip talks about Stan. So while they talk about their spouses and they're not there, I think it gives them the ability to be a little closer than they would have been if they hadn't talked about them.
I think you're absolutely right.
Philip says, Stan almost punched me. And Sandra says, well, he's always trying to be the tough guy. And then Philip says, in a little Freudian slip here, when your friend thinks you're seeing his wife, I mean ex-wife, or ex-wife, wife, whatever he said in that order,
mm-hmm.
That's a little close, flying a little close to the sun there. And then Sandra says, oh, that's ridiculous, and laughs it off a little too emphatically.
Mm-hmm.
That isn't so ridiculous. That's what that meant, I think.
I agree.
Okay, Philip says, we have a lying incident with Paige. And Sandra kind of laughs like, oh, that's teenage stuff. And then he says, if I moved out, they would come with me. But if it happened to Stan, he would move out. He would move alone into a motel. And this, like, floors Sandra.
Mm-hmm.
She looks totally saddened by the statement.
Yep.
And she says, maybe I've been a little too hard on him. And she's super pensive. This is like mainlined itself right into her brain. It was a sledgehammer to her forehead.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, just it didn't occur to me at the time that I was watching it, but just hearing you describe that scene right now has brought to mind the idea that these people have to think on their feet all the time. Because, you know, he didn't know that Sandra was coming over, but he did know that Elizabeth had charged him with the task of befriending Stan again. So he just went ahead and did his homework while he had the opportunity.
Yeah, he had that comeback kind of chambered, ready to go.
Yeah.
If he ever needed it.
Well, I mean, you know, it was probably in his mind when he realized Sandra was at the door. You know, like, oh, wait, this is an opportunity. I'll bring it up when I get the chance.
Yeah, ironically, though, if Stan were to somehow come over for some reason and see Sandra there, he would blow up their friendship probably permanently because he would jump to the wrong conclusion.
Mm. Yeah, well, I mean, or the right conclusion, depending.
Yeah, right. Funny. So Sandra kind of ends this little interlude with Matthew doesn't see him enough and misses him. So she's saying, well, maybe I should get back to bring Matthew more with Stan. Or let him see Stan more. So, all right, Jamie, we see a scene now with the male robot and Adderholt. Haven't seen either of them in a while.
I saw Adderholt. I did not see the male robot.
Yeah. So we were going to have that male robot on this episode of our podcast, Jamie, but he wasn't able to make it tonight. Maybe next week we'll have him on.
Well, he was here for a minute, but then he was gone.
His tapes weren't spooled up.
That's right.
We didn't hear him. Mm-mm. All right, so we see the male robot and Adderholt, and he reads, as Stan walks up, he's reading something that the robot had, some piece of mail, and it's concerns about comments from the director of the FBI regarding feeling. It's not appropriate to feel things. They need to work with real hard evidence and facts.
Oh, okay, yes.
And
yes,
Stan says, well, you had feelings about me. Does this change that?
No, he said it was the letter from the director of the FBI, right? And he said that it is not appropriate to refer to the FBI as feeling things.
Yeah, it's not appropriate to feel. We have to go by the book and work with hard evidence and facts.
Oh.
No intuition in the FBI. It's all by staking people out, finding evidence, you know, finding real things.
I guess, yeah. Interesting.
So Stan says, let's keep an eye on Martha. And Adderholt thinks the facts line up about Gene. He thinks the story about Gene killing himself is the answer to the pen, the recorder pen.
Yeah. I thought that was really weird and interesting. Very strange, actually.
That Adderholt would believe that?
Yeah, because he is a very, very smart dude.
Well, it's a very believable option to take.
But I don't know. Adderholt is the guy who got ahead by being smarter than everybody else in the room, you know? I don't know.
I know, but we're in the Monday morning quarterback armchair. We can see all the things that really happened. It'd be hard to figure out that this was a setup if you didn't have our perspective.
Yeah, I guess so.
But Stan does. Stan has another perspective. He has a feeling. He says, I've been watching Martha now two nights. She did not come home. And yeah. If you want to find out who really planted that bug, help me turn Martha.
Mm-hmm.
And Adderholt says, I won't do that, but I'll take her out to dinner.
Yeah.
Guess meaning that he'll distract Martha while you investigate her.
Maybe so.
Plus, he just wants a date with Martha. He has the hots for her.
Yeah, but that's not going to work out too well because Martha's got her honey. Although, I don't know, because maybe she's not feeling so, you know, tied to old Philip.
All right, this is where we see Nina's dream, Jamie. Nina's Daenerys walking through the Red Keep dream of, like, beautiful flowers and
sprilly. Would you stop?
What?
Seriously?
Stop what?
I told you not to talk about Game of Thrones.
Well, that was, like, in the first season.
Which? Where? Flowers.
When Daenerys walked through the castle and she saw the snow coming down and she saw her baby.
Oh, that one. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was like a, it was a beautiful dream, very hopeful, beautiful dream, but it had a sad awakening.
Yes, very sad.
In her dream, she sees Stan. Stan apologizes to her for essentially, I guess, not saving her. And Anton watches from across the room, and then it all fades and she's alone in her cell.
And she's crying, and I loved that. Her acting was so good.
Yes, what's going to happen with Nina? They've used up her line. Her arc is like what could be possibly left for her.
Yeah.
She fucked up. She got redemption. She was working her way out of it. She fucked up again. She's caught again. I mean, they can't do a third time, can they?
Okay. So either Nina finally gets a life or Nina is gone.
Yeah, she's got to be gone. But I was saying that about Martha last season.
Yeah, but you were wrong.
I love Nina, too. I want to see her. I want to keep seeing her.
And especially, like, she looked so beautiful and innocent this episode.
Yeah. All right, now, there's some foreshadowing here, I think, Jamie, although I have no idea what it means. Philip gets the tickets at the travel agency. He gets 4 seats out together on the plane, but only 3 back. The hell could that mean?
That means, well, okay, so that's just like part and parcel of travel, you know, of air travel. Sometimes you can't sit, you know, everybody in your party together.
Well, I know what that means. Come on.
But what it means to me is that Philip did something dumb by choosing that. It's like saying it was okay. Because it gives more reason for Paige to be suspicious, you know, when the whole thing goes down. Or else, like, you know.
Okay, well, how would that make her suspicious?
Okay, so if Paige is sitting with her family, like if she's sitting with her brother and her mother, for example, and her father is not the one that sits with the family, then she's going to be suspicious when they get back home and Tim is dead. And she's going to wonder, you know, what was the manipulation there? You know, did Dad not sit with us so that he could plan Pastor Tim's murder? You know, that's just it, because they spent a whole lot of conversation and screen time and script time trying to come up with this whole thing about like how everybody was going to be together during that vacation to reinforce to Paige that nobody was off planning murders.
Yeah, Gabriel even says at one point, no phone calls. You don't do anything that reaches outside of your little family unit there.
Right.
But they're on the plane. Like, she could probably look down the aisle and see her dad sitting 8 rows away, or Elizabeth, or Henry, or whatever. I mean, they could split the 4 people up any way they want.
Yeah, you're right. And so maybe it doesn't mean anything. Maybe it was just talking. But there went another terrible accent for somebody who doesn't have an accent. Was that Russian dude who's like working in the travel place?
Yeah. Why is the Russian? They hired a Russian dude to work in their fake travel agency because it's their agency, right?
Yes, I think they're all Russian. I think all of those people who work in there are Russian.
Hmm.
Yeah, but he's not a real Russian, and his accent was horrible, and it just made me so mad. I hate that. I freaking hate it.
Good to make time for family.
It's just so stupid.
Yeah, but I'm still struggling with this 4 and 3 together, and I understand that it's a very common thing in planes that you don't always get 4 seats together, so that should be easy for Paige to accept, and then I think what I said is true, that the person who's the 4th man out could be visibly seen by the other 3. So it's not like Dad didn't come back with us and he took a different jet to get home faster to kill Pastor Tim. You know, I don't think it's that. But then what the hell is it?
I don't know.
Ugh. Got so many questions and no answers, Jamie.
Sorry.
I mean, not you. This episode.
I know.
They do get rooms and on the PGA golf course, though, in Orlando.
Yeah.
All right, now they talk about strategy when they get back or when they're alone again. Elizabeth says, you still think it's better to leave? And Philip says, yeah, we can get to Odessa, and it's like seaport, I guess a nice sea resort area of Russia. And, okay, Elizabeth says, what do we do then? We got 2 kids who don't know anyone. They don't speak the language. And what about us? She's, again, really more concerned about the family than the strategy of the mission.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I like the fact that Elizabeth's turning softer.
Yes. I think she was really in line for that. I think she needed that, the character, Elizabeth. I hope that they're not too heavy-handed with it, because they could easily go overboard with that. Elizabeth is who she is. You know, she's an ideologue from the word go. She is an absolute rabid fundamentalist Shiite Russian. She is not about to turn her hat, you know, over to the America side. So I think they need to handle this carefully.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see, you know, this evolution.
Well, that pendulum swings a little bit more even towards family when Philip says, the alarm to me says, run, 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 but you have no such alarm, so we stay. Mm-hmm. And Paige loses no matter what we do. And then Elizabeth reaches over and holds his hand to try to comfort him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Philip says, we have to meet with Gabriel. And they go over there, and this is where he's sick. He's lying on the floor with some blood expectorated all over the floor, and he says, get out. Just get away from me, get out. And they struggle here with what to do, Jamie. Are they already infected? Should they try to help him? Do they go out and infect other people? Pretty complicated and tricky scene here.
Yeah.
So then they run out and they meet with Willem Dafoe Jr., William. He's like, I thought he looks like Willem Dafoe.
It was freaking hilarious. I started laughing. I literally started laughing when they went to tell him what was going on, because honestly, I really expected, like, I was thinking in my head, when he realizes what's wrong, he's going to take off running. But I didn't think that it would really happen. So
he runs like a fat guy, too, swinging his arms madly. It's like he never ran before in his life. He asks a few questions. Okay, got it. Okay, one more. And then he bolts like a madman. It was somewhat comical.
I swear to God, I just laughed so hard. It was crazy, you know, because it was that moment of like, I don't know, you know, like I was fully confident in my mind that would never happen. And then it did.
It's a very short-term solution, too, because what's it going to do, run and hide somewhere behind a tree? Philip catches him right away and spits right in his face, infecting him. They're like, okay, we're all in the same boat, so let's find the solution.
Oh, my God, it was crazy. And, you know, and there was part of it that was really, you know, morbid and reminiscent of, you know, who else Philip was on top of this season, being violent with them. And, you know, and so it was really interesting because it was the blackest humor that you could possibly have. I mean, that's the blackest humor I think I've ever witnessed. You know, this funny scene where this dude, like, takes off running. They chase him, you know, and catch him and pull him down to the ground. And then Philip jumps on top like he's in a schoolyard and spits in the dude's mouth. I mean, it's just such a, like, schoolyard bully kind of situation.
Yeah, they did. It was, oh, like, overly comic. Like, get off of me.
After yeah, like, I mean, it was really freaking funny, and it was still funny, like, even when they got back to the dude's apartment.
Yeah, before they leave, he says, you should have wrapped Gabriel and burned him, wrapped him in plastic and burned him.
Yeah.
And then he takes them to his sterile apartment and makes them take their shoes off.
Yeah.
Everything's sealed and packed in that apartment, Jamie. He's allergic to everything, and what's he allergic to? Dust and butter and candy?
I loved it so much because, okay, so, like, I work with this girl who she's one of the best people I've ever met, and she's got the freaking weirdest allergies. She's getting married in a few months, and she's marrying this dude who's allergic to cucumbers. I have never heard of such a thing in my life, and she's allergic to crazy stuff, like raspberries and, like, other things. Well, okay, so she's allergic to shellfish, but that's normal. But like, she's got these weird allergies, and everybody in her family that is coming to this wedding seems to have like all these allergies. People are allergic to lemons and, like, you know, parsley and stuff. It's weird.
I think a lot of that's psychosomatic.
No.
Yeah,
no.
I know you people, you nuts don't think it is, but Michelle's like this too. She's allergic to a bunch of stuff. I think it is.
Dude, if you have an actual, okay, so you're like sitting in a place one day and, okay, for example, like she tells this story about like that she washed her hands with some soap, all natural soap that contained the ingredient, you know, that her fiance is allergic to, right? It was like he had already washed his hands and gone somewhere. And then, like, she washed her hands and was like, oh, this soap smells so good. What is it? Da, 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 da. Looked at it, and it was cucumber soap. And she went up to him, and he was already, like, breaking out in hives, like, all over his hands. It's not like, you know, I mean, I would imagine that they're probably maybe 0.0027 of the population has psychosomatic allergies. The rest of the people have real allergies.
Like, you I can don't know. The mind is a powerful thing.
What? Okay. So how are you going to convince your mind to only react to one thing, whether you know it's there or not?
Well, I think some people do have allergies, but I think a lot of people are crazily think that if they eat something, it's going to make them sick or give them a reaction. Do you believe in do you believe in comfort pets?
Yeah, I do. I think that that's a psychological thing. I think that people, you know, some people feel more comfortable with a pet than they would, you know, without one. It's almost like a security blanket or something.
Okay, just filling out your profile here, Jamie. Checking off the list.
All right.
Well, he's allergic to a bunch of stuff, and he can't smell, and he has no body fluids that lubricate anything anymore. He's like messed up totally from being.
That was wild. I swear that was so funny. It was that. This was the comic relief for the last three episodes. Honestly, he said, "My skin has no natural lubrication."
By the way, I don't think he's psychosomatic because he's in a freaking chemical factory. I think his problems are really real.
Yeah, they are.
Even though I may doubt some other people's problems. So he gives them, himself and them, some sort of an inoculation.
Mm-hmm.
I think they call it broad spectrum antibiotic.
Yeah.
And actually the next episode is the name of that. I think it's the name of the antibiotic. He tells them what it is. But then they do the same for Gabriel. Give him a big old shot right in the neck.
Yeah.
So, Jamie, if he runs away from them originally, like he did, would he really have gone over to Gabriel's house with them? Like the heart of the storm, the eye of the storm?
Yeah, well, okay. So I think he knew that his running away was like way lame and it wasn't going to help him. And then, you know, by the time he got back to his place, after Philip spitting in his mouth, he knew that if he was going to be infected, he was infected. So he gave himself the shot that seemed to be, you know, like a good, as good an inoculation as anything, and then proceeded to, you know, go over there and do what he had to do. I mean, what else could he?
So it's in for a dime, in for a dollar. Like, he's got the spit in the face, and he's, what else? I guess I couldn't get any more infected than I already am.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So on the way, during this process, they examine this frozen vessel that Gabriel has apparently put the glanders into, some thermos-type vessel to transport it.
Mm-hmm.
And Willem Dafoe Willem says it's potentially poor threads in the top of that thing. But why would Gabriel have had to take the vial apart? Why couldn't he just put the whole vial inside the frozen thing with the bad threads?
I don't know. It's weird.
Well,
I don't know.
Willem Dafoe bakes it to kill it. Anything past 131 degrees will kill this germ, this glanders germ.
Mm-hmm.
He cranks it up to probably the max, what, 450?
Yeah, I don't know. I thought he said 2-something. I don't know.
He said 131 would be enough, but he's like, what the heck? Let's turn it up high.
Yeah.
All right, we go back to Henry now. Henry's playing Space Cadet. And Paige is looking at him really fondly, almost like I thought it was like her regretting her lost childhood.
Oh, no. When I saw her looking at him, I was like, she's going to goddamn tell this kid.
I thought she was looking at him almost maternally. Like,
I don't know. But I was fully ready for her to open her big mouth again.
No, she's learned now. She's sharp, man. And plus, she gives a kind of a really fond smile when she looks at him. She was thinking of something.
Maybe. I don't know.
And he's her little brother.
Yeah.
And she knows the trouble that they're kind of encountering. Henry's free from all this concern. He knows nothing of all this bullshit.
Yeah, maybe she's enjoying his innocence.
So Willem Dafoe gives Philip and Elizabeth doses for the next 24 hours. What, every 6 hours or every 4 hours, something? They have to keep taking these shots.
Right.
And Philip says, I guess we're not going to Epcot. Damn it.
Oh, God. The last, like, what, 20 minutes of this episode was really funny.
Yeah, it was funny, huh?
Yeah.
They were dealing with the most dangerous part of it, and it was the funniest.
Yeah.
The germ was in their hands and on them.
Yep. The thing they've been scared of and playing hot potato with for 3 episodes.
Yeah, so you think Gabriel's going to make it?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I think that the fact that they got to him and he was still alive. So that chemical, Jamie, is chloramphicol, chloramphicol.
Okay.
Chloramphicol.
Okay.
And I don't know what that is, but I think it may be that antidote, that broad-based antidote that's in the shot.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that's it for 403, and then 404 is the chloramphicol. Jamie, how do people reach you if they need to get a hold of you in the meantime?
I'm on Twitter, and I'm at WordGirly.
And I'm at ScathingTweets. And next week, Jamie, we may have our friend, the male robot, come on.
That is correct.
His memory tapes got awakened by his reappearance in the series.
Probably.
All right, Jamie, we'll have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next time.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye.
You too. Bye.
The Americans premieres Wednesday, January 28th at 10, only on FX.